for Lialogos Radio, the weekly radio program featuring the best in Greek music and culture, plus interviews with Greek and international newsmakers. Lialogos Radio with Michael Nevradakis begins now. You're tuned in for another week of the Lialogos Radio, the worldwide Greek radio program which bridges the global Greek community and which airs on 20 radio stations across 5 countries, 4 continents, and online. My name is Michael Nevradakis, and today on our program and the Lialogos interview series, we will feature an interview with economist, analyst, and the general secretary of Greece's United Popular Front, Dimitris Kazakis, who will speak to us about what's happening economically and politically in Greece at the present time, about the hot-button issue of the refugee and migrant crisis, and about his proposals for an exit from the European Union and Eurozone and the unilateral write-off of the Greek debt. This interview will be followed up by our commentary of the week, and it all begins now here on the Lialogos Radio. The Lialogos Interview Series, our weekly segment featuring interviews on matters pertaining to Greece and the worldwide Greek community. Coming up next here on the Lialogos Radio. Joining us today on the Lialogos Radio and the Lialogos Interview Series is economist, analyst, and the general secretary of Greece's United Popular Front, Dimitris Kazakis, who will speak to us today about the latest economic and political developments in Greece and about the hot-button issue of the refugee and migrant crisis in Greece and in Europe. Dimitri, thank you for joining us once again.
Thank you for having me.
Before discussing economic developments in Greece, let's first speak about the refugee and migrant crisis. You have spoken extensively about this issue, and I wanted to begin by asking you about the recent deal that was reached between the European Union and Turkey, which was co-signed by the Greek government. Is this agreement legal, and is it enforceable? And what does international law have to say about the issue?
No, it is not legal. This is not just my opinion. It is a legal issue which has to do with international law and international treaties, such as the 1951 Geneva Convention on Refugees and of all the treaties which followed from that. This agreement is not legal, and this accusation has been made by the UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency. What this agreement does is it rolls back the clock in terms of how refugees and migrants are treated to the interwar period and to the manner in which the League of Nations and the great powers of that era handled the movements of refugees which had been displaced during that time. I believe, however, based on the events that are unfolding, that today's situation is even worse than that of the interwar period. I fear that the refugee and migrant crisis, at least in the manner that it is being approached by the European Union and Turkey, is quickly turning into a hostage situation. These people are being held hostage. They are the hostages of various power structures, and not just the European Union or Turkey, but other invisible powers as well, which have come to Europe based on the rationale that they would be assisting with the refugee issue. This situation today reminds me very much of what we saw take place in Rwanda during the 1990s, or in the Sudetenland during the interwar period, when refugees and migrants were indeed used to spread the conflict over an even wider area. This, of course, worries us because no one is collecting information. No one is identifying or certifying these groups. There are reports that many of these migrants were parts of groups which were fighting as mercenaries in Syria. This is a very significant issue, and that is why I fear that sooner or later, nobody knows exactly when, the refugee and migrant crisis will be transformed into a full-fledged hostage situation. This, of course, creates a wider problem for southeastern Europe and for Europe as a whole.
Were there other options that the Greek government could have followed instead of this agreement? And could Greece, for instance, have enacted direct measures against Turkey?
Of course. The first thing that could have been done would be to deal directly with the human trafficking taking place out of Turkey. sending these refugees and migrants into Greece without anybody knowing who they are or for what reason these populations are being sent to Europe. There are many accusations, including from King Abdullah II of Jordan and from numerous international organizations. Greece could have implemented sanctions against Turkey, such as prohibiting goods coming from Turkey to be transported by Greece, either by sea or land. Greece could have significantly reduced the number of permits issued to Turkey, allowing its goods to flow through Greece. Secondly, Greece could have filed official claims to various international organizations, not just the United Nations, but also, for instance, with the International Maritime Organization, regarding the manner in which Turkey is treating the migrants and refugees and transporting them by sea into Greece. This would enable those organizations to take action and to enact measures against Turkey in order for the situation to be stopped. Thirdly, Turkey has been classified as an unsafe country for refugees and migrants. Why do we tolerate this situation? Why does the international community tolerate this? And why does Europe actually support what Turkey is doing, especially through the recent agreement which was signed? Something which Greece could have done, which we have been arguing for a while now, is for Greece to leave the Schengen and Dublin II treaties. These two agreements indeed violate international standards for the treatment of migrants and refugees. Moreover, these agreements are being violated in practice today by the European Union itself. Each member state is closing its borders at will, as we have seen. Finally, Greece should go ahead and identify everyone who enters its territories in accordance with international norms and with the assistance of the UNHCR to treat these people in accordance with international treaties and protocols. And for all those who are determined to be refugees, legally speaking, to grant them their asylum papers as foreseen by international law and allow them to freely travel to any country they wish, as foreseen by the UN's Geneva Convention of 1951. To keep these people stranded within Greece is illegal and indeed racist. And the only reason why this is happening is not to give these people any legal status or certification, allowing them to be treated in any ways that the powers see fit.
Does the NATO presence, as well as the presence of Turkish police and military officials in the Aegean region, actually protect Greece, as well as the refugees and migrants?
Of course not. This was proven by the large naval force which the European Union formed during the summer and fall of 2015, with the supposed goal of halting human trafficking of refugees and migrants from North America towards the European Union, and primarily Italy, Spain, and to a lesser extent France. What happened in reality? Absolutely nothing. After major scandals which broke following the sinking and mass murder of refugees and migrants who were being transported at sea, this naval force was dissolved. It was proven that you cannot combat this issue, and particularly the issue of human trafficking, with military and naval means. The human trafficking operates from within the heart of Europe and is closely tied with the banking system, as well as the existing networks of weapons traffickers, drug traffickers, and of course, human traffickers. Therefore, the manner in which you can combat this problem is by doing so within your own borders and in cooperation with other countries and their police forces. You cannot fight this problem at sea, and especially not through military means. Therefore, NATO has no role to play in the refugee and migrant issue. The real reason that NATO is involved is so that it can take over operational control of the Aegean Sea. What we have been saying from the beginning is that this is a blatant violation of the national sovereign interests of Greece. Under what basis and with what authority does a Cold War era power, one which time and time again has started wars and gotten involved in military conflicts, take over operational control of the Aegean? What this does is it transforms the Aegean Sea into another battleground of the major powers. As the goal of NATO is clearly not to protect the migrants and the refugees, NATO's goal is to confront Russia. We have seen this yet again in recent days after the reemergence of the old conflict in Armenia and Azerbaijan. What did NATO do in response? It expanded its presence in the Black Sea. This alone shows why NATO was granted operational control of the Aegean. The second issue is the presence of Turkish security forces on the Greek islands. This is inexcusable. Not even Greece's military government of the 1960s and 70s dared to allow such a thing, But we are seeing it take place today with the government of so-called leftist, patriotic, and anti-memorandum parties in Greece. This was authorized without a law being passed in the Greek parliament, as required by Article 27, Paragraph 2 of the Greek Constitution. These Turkish security forces were illegally allowed to be stationed on the Aegean Islands, and they are doing whatever they please without local political or military authorities having any idea what their role is. And of course, the objective of the Turkish security forces is not to deal with the refugee and migrant issue, but rather with the identification of military and civilian targets on these islands, which begs the question, what is ultimately their goal?
We are on the air with economist, analyst, and the general secretary of Greece's United Popular Front, Dimitris Kazakis, here on the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos Interview Series. Greece has frequently been threatened with being ejected from the Schengen Treaty as a result of the ongoing refugee and migrant issue. Would such a development, though, actually be destructive for Greece, as has often been portrayed by Greece's politicians and by the Greek media?
No, absolutely not. On the contrary, this would allow us, if, of course, we had a government which respected its citizens, the country, and which acted in a sovereign manner, to operate within the context of international law. The Schengen Treaty is not compatible with international law as a whole. It is not based on the principle of reciprocity. It is not in harmony with the international treaties which Greece and other European countries have signed. That is why Greece should unilaterally leave this treaty. This would allow us to handle these issues in accordance with our national interests and in accordance with international treaties in which Greece is party to. The Schengen Treaty, as well as the Dublin II regulation, were passed in order to allow the European Union to bypass the international obligations of the European countries with regard to the issue of human rights and the handling of refugee and migrant crises. This is why these agreements were created and why Greece must drop out of these agreements at once. If Greece still possessed its sovereignty as a nation and had a government which was truly democratic and truly acted in the national interest, these issues could have been dealt with much greater ease and there would be no problem today. I don't understand how countries such as Jordan, which has accepted close to 2 million refugees, and Lebanon, which has accepted over 1.25 million refugees, which are housed in various camps, are able to operate in harmony with the UNHCR, at least as far as we know. There have been no problems or difficulties reported from these areas. So why are there such problems in Greece? These problems exist in Greece because we are not operating in accordance with international law and international treaties. Instead, we are enforcing the interests and the orders of Berlin and Brussels. This must immediately stop.
Let's focus now on ongoing political and economic developments. We recently heard about the high-profile leaks of IMF discussions regarding Greece and the ongoing so-called negotiations that are taking place, and this was followed by the even more high-profile leak of the so-called Panama Papers. What are your initial reactions to these recent developments?
My personal opinion on the matter is that these leaks did not contribute anything substantial to the contemporary political discourse in Greece and worldwide. Firstly, because the leak which regarded the supposed IMF negotiations in Greece did not reveal anything new. Everyone knows the IMF's position and the manner in which they operate. Indeed, they have revealed these positions publicly in the past, and therefore the leaks did not present us anything new. Despite this, I do believe the leaks were planned out and authorized in advance. It is pretty obvious that this was the case, or they had to do with the fact that Germany is fiercely opposing the IMF's proposal, or its encouragement, if you will, for a large write-off of Greece's debt and for a greater emphasis to be placed on a different set of so-called reforms, as the IMF calls them, which would have more to do with privatizations and the selling off of the country and less to do with the meeting of fiscal targets. The Syriza government made a big deal out of the IMF's position. Indeed, when Greek Defense Minister Panos Kamenos visited Washington on March 20th, he made a big fuss over accepting the IMF's proposals. Here we see a conflict. Mr. Kamenos wants to be the IMF's man in Greece, while Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras wants to be German Chancellor Angela Merkel's man in Greece. Merkel's position is against any write-down of the Greek debt, not even in the manner in which the so-called debt haircut took place with the PSI agreement of 2012. Of course, the proposals put forth by the IMF do not constitute a solution for Greece by any means. But what they do reveal is a schism between Washington and Berlin. And the Syriza government in Greece has chosen to align itself with Berlin. Now, in terms of what will follow, most likely we will see a fourth memorandum agreement based on the proposals of German financier Wolfgang Schäuble and the introduction of a dual or parallel currency in Greece. That is why the Germans do not want the IMF to be involved with this matter. That is what we are likely seeing arise out of this conflict, in addition to the desire to distract the public and fool the people into thinking that Syriza engaged in fierce negotiations with the IMF and other nonsense like this. All of this is pure nonsense for the consumption of those who still believe that the Syriza government is capable of conducting even a cursory negotiation with Greece's best interests in mind.
And despite these recent leaks, and despite the IMF and its negative role being exposed publicly once more, we still see the Greek government sitting at the same table with the IMF and the other lenders.
Of course, and not just this, but let's not forget that the IMF is not participating in the third memorandum agreement, which was signed, or in the funding mechanism for the third memorandum. That being the case, could someone please explain to me why legislation has been passed and signed into law, which requires that any political decision that is made in Greece by any government or by parliament must first be sent to the IMF, the European Commission, the European Central Bank, who must then agree on these proposals before they can be passed? This is part of the third memorandum agreement, which was signed into law in Greece on August 14th, 2015, and which has been published in the Greek government's bulletin. Could somebody please explain to me how the Greek government is supposed to clash with the IMF when this very same government has signed an agreement in which the IMF is not officially participating in, but where the IMF still has the power to accept or reject political decisions made in Greece in advance? The subservience of the Greek government has surpassed even that of the Quisling regime. We need to come up with new terminology for what this government is doing and for what this government's ministers are signing off upon.
Do you believe that the current Syriza-led government will stay in power for much longer?
I believe that there are only two ways for this government to leave power. The first way is under the orders of its bosses in Berlin and Brussels. Once they have signed off on everything and completed their mission, since, as we know, they are nothing more than the agents of Angela Merkel, Jean-Claude Juncker, Donald Tusk, and the rest of them, plus the bankers, that is one way that they will leave. The other will be if the Greek people demand it. The political situation at this time does not lend itself to calm and orderly political developments or the will and desire of the Greek people. Political decisions in Greece at this time have to do with Greece's big bosses. They're the ones who decide when the elections will take place and in what manner. The only way in which this situation can change is if the Greek people find a way not just to express their disapproval and their anger over what is happening, but find a way to overturn this government and as soon as possible. The Greek people have a responsibility to do this, and before we see the situation get even worse. And these worst days which follow will not have to do with Greece's economy, but with Greece's national security.
We are on the air with economist, analyst, and the general secretary of Greece's United Popular Front, Dimitris Kazakis, here on Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series. You mentioned the issue of the potential introduction of a dual or parallel currency system in Greece a few moments ago, and we have been seeing recently the touting of Yanis Varoufakis and Zoe Kostandopoulou as future saviors of Greece. They have signed off on a so-called Plan B for Europe, which, if I'm not mistaken, calls for the introduction of a parallel currency regime in Greece. Is this indeed the case, and what would a parallel currency actually mean for Greece?
There is no economist who would support a parallel currency. Anyone who knows anything about economics could not support a parallel currency, and this has been the case since ancient times. Anyone who supports a parallel currency is either a con artist and a common criminal who is supporting interests which are in opposition to the interests of the people, or he is completely clueless about economics and therefore dangerous as well. What Mr. Varoufakis wanted and the orders he was given to implement during the time that he was still Greece's finance minister was to prepare Greece for the introduction of a so-called alternative currency. This so-called alternative currency would resemble the IOUs which were introduced in the state of California in 2009. This is why James Galbraith was chosen to lead a team, largely comprised of officers from Goldman Sachs, and which was hired by the Greek government government with taxpayer money to prepare the introduction of a parallel currency of an IOU following the example of California. The IOUs introduced in California had catastrophic consequences, so you can imagine what the consequences would be like in a country like Greece today, with an economy in the condition that it is in, if such IOUs were introduced. What prevented their introduction, however, was an unforeseen event. The 62% who voted no to further austerity in the referendum of July 5th, 2015, the powers that feared a social uprising if they introduced an alternative currency at that time, and they therefore decided to introduce the third memorandum instead to completely stifle any dissent, and then to potentially bring in the alternate currency at some later date. What they have done is parade out their various representatives, both from the right and the left, such as the self-proclaimed radical Marxist, Yanis Varoufakis, who does not want to hear a thing about returning to a national domestic currency, but who continues to parrot in favor of an alternative currency. A solution which has been rejected as far back as ancient times in the production titled The Frogs by Aristophanes. Varoufakis, being culturally illiterate, does not know about this, nor does he seem to be aware of Gresham's Law, which is an economic principle which explains why parallel currencies do not work and has been seen historically with the catastrophic example of bimetallism, for instance. Then we have Mrs. Constantopoulou, who keeps saying that democracy will solve our problems, but who seems to ignore the fact that this democracy does not give you anything to eat. You need to be able to feed yourself first to have democracy, and not the other way around. Then we have Basil Marquezinis, Sir Basil, if I'm not mistaken, who came out recently in favor of a parallel currency. Then we have Mr. Karatsiferis, who reemerged in Greece's political landscape just in case he manages to fool some gullible voters into voting for him one more time following his treasonous acts as part of the Papademos government, for which they should have been tried. All of these individuals are now being paraded in order to create support for the so-called alternative currency, as well as other individuals from both the left and the right, in an effort to fool the people into thinking that this is the solution. Why are all these individuals appearing on the political forefront all of a sudden? It is to pave the way for the so-called Shabo solution. Now, whether or not this so-called Shabo solution will involve Varoufakis, Kyriakos, Mitsotakis, and or some permutation of the current Syriza government remains to be seen. I can't say that I know. What's important, though, is that it needs to be made clear that a national currency, which is issued by the government as the sole legal tender, the one and only authorized legal tender within an economy, is different from a parallel currency, and that the goal of a national currency would be to finance the national income. That is the goal, not to finance the well-being of the banksters. A national currency would bring investments, employment, and so forth. But a national currency has to be issued by the state, as Abraham Lincoln had stated just months before his assassination. That's what a national currency is, and it is upon this structure that a democracy can be formed, because otherwise you will not be able to control the small group of people who will be producing currency and who therefore will have control over the manner in which your economy is financed and your economy operates.
There are many who believe that if Greece enforced more strictly all of the memorandum agreements that it has signed, it would be just like Ireland and Cyprus are today, countries that are presented as success stories for having completed their memorandum programs. Is this indeed the case, though?
No, of course not. Those who are saying such things do not know what is happening in these two countries. On paper, yes, they have completed the memorandum agreements. However, in Ireland, for instance, austerity policies are now being enforced, which are much harsher than those that were being enforced with the memorandums. Secondly, taxation in Ireland has skyrocketed, even upon such basic goods as water, and as a result, many households have cut their water supply, and they are unable to pay for it. This is a direct result of the very high and inelastic taxation which is being enforced on basic goods such as water and electricity, with the goal of repaying the increased debts the country has incurred due to its banking system, debts which were thrust upon the shoulders of Ireland's taxpayers. Thirdly, when the memorandum agreement was still in force, the skyrocketing household debt in Ireland created an opening for the banks and the hedge funds to take over property of the people of Ireland. What we are seeing now in Ireland is a barrage of home auctions and foreclosures, which has led to an ever-growing problem of homelessness who are being supported by local municipalities and shelters. I don't know how such a situation can be deemed a success story.
Δεν ξέρω αν αυτό το πράγμα μπορεί να θεωρηθεί success story.
And there's a tremendous wave of migration out of Ireland as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Βεβαίως, ναι. Ένα στους τέσσερις.
Yes, absolutely. One in four people in Ireland has left the country in search of an opportunity to make a living elsewhere. Ireland, at this time, in terms of the level of investment in the country, is below even Greece. And this is a country which just a few years ago was nicknamed the Celtic Tiger and had a very high level of investment. Today, investment in Ireland amounts to less than 7% of GDP. This is a figure lower than Yemen, which is a country that is currently embroiled in war. Now, as for Cyprus, we are talking about an unprecedented catastrophe. Cyprus historically never had an unemployment rate which surpassed 7%. Today, it's more than double that percentage, officially. There was never a problem of temporary or seasonal employment in Cyprus. Today, 50% of employment in Cyprus falls under that category. There was never a problem of only being able to find part-time employment in Cyprus. Today, 15% of the working population of Cyprus is employed part-time and is unable to find full-time employment. Average incomes have sunk like a rock in Cyprus, and more people in Cyprus have mortgaged their homes. Though at one time the people of Cyprus had high incomes and high levels of saving in the bank, now they find themselves having mortgaged their homes and unable to service these loans. A property massacre of sorts. A wave of foreclosures of private property in Cyprus is looming, but this is being held back until the infamous national problem of Cyprus, the occupation of over one-third of the island by Turkey, is solved through the implementation of a new version of the so-called Annan Plan, which would downgrade the sovereign nation of Cyprus into a community that would be equal to the community which has been formed in the occupied territories of Cyprus. This would lead to the creation of a so-called federation, a sort of hybrid state, which will have no chance of being able to function politically, nationally, and of course, economically. That is what is happening in Cyprus today. Cyprus finds itself in its worst economic condition since the Turkish Attila invasion of 1974. It has, in essence, been forced to sustain a new Attila, the Attila of the European Union. And the unfortunate thing is that if the people of Cyprus, just like the people of Greece, don't do something, the country will not survive.
We are on the air with economist, analyst, and the general secretary of Greece's United Popular Front, Dimitris Kazakis, here on Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos Interview Series. You continue to advocate in favor of Greece departing from both the Eurozone and the European Union, and you also support the unilateral write-off of Greece's debt. What are the steps which Greece could follow in order to accomplish this, and what does international law have to say about the issue?
What we need to understand is that an occupation regime has been forced upon Greece, one which is slowly but surely being transformed into a military occupation as well, in addition to the economic, political, and national occupation which already exist. How was such an occupation implemented? It began with the infamous loan agreements which Greece signed not with the IMF, but with the European Union. These loan agreements stripped from Greece a basic sovereign right which exists under international law, for national immunity in the exercise of national sovereignty. With the third agreement, which was signed, national sovereignty was completely stripped from Greece. So what is the first thing that Greece should do? Greece should implement the UN Charter and the international treaties which consider national sovereignty the foundation upon which a nation state is formed, and to renounce any agreement which strips the country of its sovereignty. We are talking here about loan agreements, which are connected to three-quarters of Greece's national debt, and which are connected to the so-called European bailout mechanism. Greece or any country cannot consider as legal any obligations which threaten the country with the stripping of its national sovereignty. It is as if war had been declared against the country. Is it even fathomable that a sovereign country could accept such agreements? If it does, it means that it is a colony, which is exactly what has happened in Greece. In fact, Greece is worse than a colony. So this is the basis upon which Greece should make its first move. Now, the remaining 25% of the debt belongs to the banks, which have flat out stolen and looted from the Greek people. This is a matter which, quite simply, can be solved by the justice system. You put the justice system to work investigating and analyzing all the money which has gone to the banking system. We're talking about vast sums of money here. To give an example, during the first 6 months of 2015, during which time the supposedly fierce negotiations were taking place with the Cyprus-led government in Greece, Greek banks received from the European Emergency Liquidity Assistance Fund, the so-called ELA, and from Mario Draghi, a total of 94 billion euros. Where did all this money go? Supposedly, this money went to cover bank deposits which were fleeing the country. Okay, well, that only amounts to 43 billion euros. We were also told that some funds were used to secure everyday liquidity. Okay, well, that amounts to another 2 billion euros for a total of 45 billion. Even if we rounded up to 50 billion, where did the remaining 45 billion euros go? Why is no one being held accountable for this? Who owes this money? This money was lent from Mr. Draghi with an interest rate that was indeed much higher than a normal interbank rate, and it is owed by the Greek taxpayer because this money was loaned with the guarantee that it would be covered by Greek taxpayers. Why isn't anyone being held responsible for this? Why isn't anyone being held to account for what happened to these funds? Therefore, what needs to happen? Prosecutors need to get involved to investigate what happened and to quite simply eliminate this debt from Greece's ledger. After all, those who stole and looted this money are tried and convicted by the justice system with the full extent of the law. In this way, the entirety of this debt would be written off. Not even a cent would be owed. Where would Greece owe the money? To Goldman Sachs, which speculated against Greece and which has been investigated by U.S. authorities for its role in the Greek crisis? Why do we accept this? We are their victims. Why do we accept this? We accept this because evidently Greece's politicians have made deals with Goldman Sachs to split the proceeds. But just because our politicians are thieves and con artists, does that mean that we have to pay for the damage they inflict? No. They must be tried and the debt must be written off. In this way, we will not even have to deal with the issues of odious debt or whatever else is foreseen by international law. Greece's debt is more crude, if you will. It is illegal. It is the product of illegal acts which took place against the Greek people and the Greek state. Therefore, this is the way to deal with the issue of the debt. From that point forward, one thing which Greece must not do is borrow on global markets ever again. Greece should never again borrow from the global markets. There is a neoliberal theory which states that it is impossible for a nation state not to borrow. This is nonsense. Nation states borrow in international markets for the sole purpose of covering up the black holes created by politicians and the looting which has taken place from the national coffers on behalf of the political parties in power and the interest groups which are supported by these political parties. A national economy has no need for borrowing on the international markets on its own. When a national economy does need to borrow money, it can do so through internal borrowing whenever necessary. And the only reason to borrow is this, to make investments. Actual investments, not to feed the major contractors and government cronies, but bona fide investments which are the result of careful planning upon which an economic cost-benefit analysis has been performed in order to ensure that the money being borrowed be repaid from the investment itself and not by forcing the taxpayers to forever stick their hands further into their pockets. National borrowing can only take place in this way. Therefore, it follows that we do not need ever to emerge onto the global financial markets to borrow. We have no need to borrow to pay pensions and salaries and all of these things. We have been borrowing all this to pay the usurious interest rates to the lenders and to pay for the criminal actions and the looting of the national coffers by politicians and their cronies. This is why Greece was borrowing, and it is time for this situation to end. We have to create a new economy and new state apparatus which will operate in the interest of the citizens and which will make their lives easy, which will protect workers, and which will present a stable environment for entrepreneurs and businesses to operate, which will allow them to grow their businesses and develop their ideas. But which business owner are we talking about? We are not talking about the corrupt oligarchs who have relied upon the government to do business. We are talking about business people who assume risk and who make investments in production and development, who respect their workers instead of treating them as slaves. This is what we mean, and this is the way forward for us.
From that point forward, how could this transition back to a national currency, this Eurozone exit, take place while avoiding the catastrophic devaluation of the new currency that some are predicting?
What I have been saying from the beginning is that everything you hear about what would happen if we return to a national currency will actually happen if we remain in the Eurozone. Yes, there will be a catastrophic devaluation if Greece departs from the euro, but it will be the euro which is devalued, not the new national currency of Greece. To give you an example, when, in late June of 2015, the referendum was announced in Greece and set for July 5th, within that 1 week period which followed, the euro was absolutely battered in international markets. The European Central Bank was forced to pour over 800 billion euros into the financial markets in order to stabilize the exchange rate of the euro versus the dollar. What this shows us is that the euro is an incredibly unstable currency, and that this is the case for a number of reasons, including the fact that its internal architecture architecture is collapsing. Therefore, if Greece left, if Greece said we're leaving, an attack would follow against the euro in the international markets. It would be an attack on such a scale that I am not certain that any amount of liquidity which the European Central Bank would pour into the markets would be enough to stabilize the one-to-one exchange rate which it desires to maintain with the dollar. Therefore, the issue is not a potential devaluation of the new national currency of Greece. The problem would be that the new national currency of Greece should not in any way be pegged to the euro, because then it would then follow the downward spiral of the euro, just as a result of all the short selling of the euro, which will take place once Greece leaves the eurozone. This short selling alone will not allow the euro to recover. Instead, it will be stabilized, if at all, by the European Central Bank at a rate of 40 to 50% of the value of the dollar, and it will be subjected to repeated and systematic attacks in the international marketplace as investors speculate which will be the next country to leave the eurozone, whether it will be Italy, Spain, or anyone else. The speculation will be enough for the euro to be unable to recover. Therefore, the issue will be this. The path will have been paved for Greece's new national currency to stabilize itself. Why will it stabilize itself? There are two primary reasons. The first reason is that the country and its economy will recover, and the quicker you recover on the basis of production and productivity, the faster your currency will stabilize. The second reason is that there will be a lot of capital which is currently parked in the eurozone, which will seek to find a safe haven of sorts and to flee the increasingly unstable euro. They will look for a safe haven, and Greece's new national currency, which will be outside of the international forex system and not traded in the international marketplace, will be one such safe haven for capital that is looking to flee the eurozone, at least for the first few years. As a result, it is actually quite possible, and indeed the most likely scenario, to see upward pressures on the value of the new national currency of Greece. This is indeed problematic for a national economy, especially when it is recovering, but this problem is more easily dealt with than if the opposite were true. This is reality based on today's conditions, and not any of the nonsense one usually hears. But even if the new national currency of Greece were to devalue, due to various pressures that it might face, so what? Norway devalued its currency, the Norwegian krone, by 40% within the last year. And what happened? Did the Norwegian economy collapse? It is performing better than any other European economy. Why is this the case? It is the case because it has a stable productive base and its currency provides real purchasing power domestically and real income for its people. As long as these two factors exist, an economy can withstand any devaluation.
We are on the air with economist, analyst, and the general secretary of Greece's United Popular Front, Dimitris Kazakis, here on the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos Interview Series. There are many who argue that Greece could not return to a national currency because it lacks a production base, as they claim, because it relies upon imports, and because it would be shut out of the international markets, and so on. How do you respond to these arguments, and how could the Greek economy sustain itself after departing from the eurozone, particularly in the first few months after leaving?
Greece lost its productive base when it was inducted into the European Economic Community, as was known at the time, and later into the European Union. This was the death blow for the Greek economy. It is true that we did not have a particularly strong productive base even before that, but whatever productive base did exist was lost once we entered the European Union. We lost our dynamic agricultural base, which produced a surplus of goods up until the 1980s when we entered the European Economic Community, and Greek farmers were absolutely battered. And secondly, we lost our industrial base. In order to recover our agriculture and industry, we need to enforce protectionist measures. Without protectionism, there cannot be production in any economy. However, the protectionist measures that we will enforce need to be selective and ensure competitiveness to provide for a truly competitive framework instead of simply protecting the profits of domestic oligarchs. We need to allow our productive capacity to grow and develop, for investment to take place in entrepreneurship and development in the private sector under conditions which protect against unfair competition or the monopoly conditions created by foreign multinationals or Greek and foreign trusts and cartels. We need to protect our producers from these trusts and cartels, either from outside our borders or from within our own economy. Only in this way can we recover our productive base. To say that we need to recover our production first and then leave the eurozone is foolish. Anyone who argues this either does not know what they are talking about, which means they are dangerous, or they are simply fooling the people with the goal of maintaining the status quo and a situation in which we are going from bad to worse. The question, of course, remains, could we even restart our economy? Of course we can. Right now, at this moment, the Central Bank of Greece has approximately 42 billion euros in foreign currency reserves and deposits in its coffers. This is 42 billion euros which could be used as Greece's foreign currency reserves. In addition, the investment portfolios of Greek banks contain, at this time, convertible securities, primarily bonds issued by Britain and Luxembourg, totaling 56 billion euros. This 56 billion euros, plus the other 42 billions, total 98 billion euros of total foreign currency reserves. Greece each year needs approximately $20 billion for its inelastic imports, for goods such as industrial equipment, fuel, and basic needs such as medicine. When you have approximately $100 billion in foreign currency reserves, you could go 4, even 5 years without even one tourist setting foot in Greece and leaving behind foreign currency, without one export taking place, without even one contract for the shipping and transport of goods taking place within the Greek economy that would provide foreign currency reserves for the Greek economy. Such a far-fetched situation could only take place under conditions of complete and total warfare. We do not believe that this is a scenario that is likely to take place, and indeed the conditions are not there for such a scenario to materialize. If such a thing happened in Greece, when the European Union, and particularly the countries of Northern and Central Europe, will be the ones who are hit the hardest and will collapse, because approximately 60% of the goods which are transferred from the East to the West pass through Greece. If there is a war in Greece, if anyone provokes war with Greece, the markets of Central and Northern Europe will collapse. Consumer prices will skyrocket, and the European economy, which is already facing catastrophic deflationary pressures, will collapse. Let's not forget that Greece represents 0.28% of global GDP. Therefore, we do not believe that such a scenario will take place. In the meantime, Greece has the ability to stand on its own feet. Greece, even today, has 98% self-sufficiency in terms of its food production. It also has self-sufficiency in terms of energy production as well, with plenty of cheap lignite for the production of electricity. Therefore, we would have no problem undertaking an orderly transition to a national currency, which would allow for a quick recovery of the Greek economy based exclusively on its own internal dynamism and strengths, but would be outward looking as well, and at last be able to develop trading relations with any country instead of operating as an economic protectorate of Germany.
In closing, where can our listeners find out more information about the United Popular Front, its five basic principles, its proposals for a return to a national currency, and about your daily radio program as well?
There is, first of all, the main website of the United Popular Front, which you could visit in order to find out all the details that you need about our activities throughout Greece. The address is www.epamhellas.gr. There is also the online radio station www.e-roi.gr, where I host a daily radio program from Monday to Friday from 2 to 3:30 or 4 p.m. Greek time, depending on that day's developments. This radio station also is the home of numerous other radio programs which allow the listener not just to learn about what is happening in terms of economic and political developments, but also Greek culture, education, and music. This is important because Greece and its culture and its people are being attacked on multiple fronts, not just economically and socially, but also culturally and on a historical basis as well. Finally, there is the newspaper Anapoda, which is currently published monthly and which we hope to start publishing every 2 weeks, which further presents our views and positions and analysis as to what is happening in Greece.
Well, Mr. Kazakis, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today here on the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series, and thank you for your analysis as well.
I thank you as well.
We just wrapped up this week's edition of the Dialogos interview series and our interview with the economist and general secretary of Greece's United Popular Front, Dimitris Kazakis, and we thank Matt Houtsma for his assistance with the voiceover of this interview. The podcast of this interview will soon be available on our website, dialogosmedia.org, in the Dialogos Radio apps for Android, Kindle, BlackBerry, and Chrome, in iTunes, TuneIn.com in a Windows Store, and in Anobex Radio, WeCast, Player FM, and Stitcher app. Coming up now is our commentary of the week. The Alagos Radio's Commentary of the Week. Each week, Michael Navratakis provides views and opinions on issues pertaining to Greece and to the worldwide Greek community. Coming up next, here on The Alagos Radio. In Greece today, it seems, unfortunately, that people are willing to accept just about everything. There is no other way to explain what is happening in the country. We are talking about a situation and a mentality which is deserving of scientific analysis. For years now, the majority of the Greek people have accepted, without much of a fight, if at all, the first memorandum agreement, the interim memorandum agreement, the second memorandum, and the complete betrayal of the July 5th, 2015 referendum result, and the passage of the third memorandum agreement by the supposedly radical and leftist Syriza government. Ah, but I forgot. Greece has been saved, again and again and again. We are told that Europe is giving Greece money to bail out the country, that Greece has averted bankruptcy, and all of this while Greece, of course, remains in Europe and part of the vaunted European family and the Eurozone. Greece is being saved day after day, allowing its people to live the so-called European dream. This, of course, is why the Greek people are repeatedly told that the memorandums and austerity that they have endured are a blessing. And this, of course, is likely why Greece is now headed rapidly for memorandum agreement number 4, for yet another so-called bailout and even more of that wonderful European dream. What's all this about, you may be asking? A fourth memorandum? Wasn't a third memorandum agreed to and ratified less than a year ago? Isn't the oh-so-radical Syriza government negotiating as hard as it can with the IMF and its European so-called partners to protect the best interests of Greece? The same oh-so-radical government that purportedly stood up to the IMF following the latest WikiLeaks revelations? We hear the gullible and the clueless in Greece parroting the same things over and over again. Come on now, Tsipras is a good guy. He's trying hard. It's not his fault he inherited the country in its current state. He's doing the best he can. He doesn't really want to do all this. This is what the oh-so-clever and certainly non-gullible Greek people keep saying from the comfort of their couches and living rooms, excusing away the betrayal and the complete selling off of the country without even lifting a finger. Recently, behind the metal fencing and rows of riot police, the radical Greek government, which had at one time promised to put a halt to the privatizations of public assets and to disband the riot police that are now protecting it, signed the selling off of one of Europe's largest ports, the port of Piraeus, to Chinese-owned COSCO for the measly sum of 345 million euros. This was characterized as a major foreign investment by the corrupt president of the Hellenic Republic, Prokopis Pavlopoulos, but unless he was referring to an investment in a destruction of the country, he would be wrong. Just the facilities of the port of Piraeus alone are valued at more than 5 billion euros, while just a year ago, a container terminal in neighboring Turkey, that is one-third the size of the port of Piraeus, was also sold to COSCO for over 845 million euros, almost three times the price. And yet, the internal hatred and divisions in Greek society, which have been carefully cultivated over many decades, are such that many people, instead of being infuriated at the wholesale selling off of valuable and profitable public assets, are celebrating because they feel that the public employees who worked there were overpaid. So instead of advocating for better salaries for themselves, they're essentially demanding that others take a pay cut as well, ignoring the impact this would have on the Greek economy and Greek society. Ah, but once again, I forgot. Greece was saved and has remained in Europe, as if it would move to Africa or something otherwise. I guess this is why I saw absolutely no one in the streets protesting the selling off of public assets, privatizations which the current, so very leftist government had once promised to stop. But clearly the Greek people, who think they are so clever and so difficult to fool, know better. That's why they did not get up from their couches or log off of Facebook to take action. They know the country is in good hands, with the peace of mind that Greece has, quote, remained in Europe. This is why, quite soon, we will see Memorandum Agreement number 4 be signed. And once again, I can guarantee you that the Greek people will not only accept it, will not only swallow it, but they'll say thank you as well for being saved once more. Who cares if this memorandum, a product of supposedly fierce negotiations, will include even further budget cuts to meet impossibly strict fiscal targets for 2016? Who cares if it will make permanent the supposedly temporary unified property tax and indeed increase it? Who Who cares if pensions will be cut to 384 euros per month after 20 years of employment? Who cares if it will include higher taxes on electricity and water and other utilities? Who cares if it foresees the privatization of 27 large-scale public assets, including the public power company, the port of Thessaloniki, and a remaining public share in 14 regional airports in the port of Piraeus? Who cares if it foresees the future privatization of the water utilities of Athens and Thessaloniki? Greece is being saved and gets to remain, quote, in Europe, and for that we should be grateful. Where were all the Greek people who supposedly have protest in their blood when Greece's Supreme Court ruled recently that if an employee is injured on a job and has to take time off of work, he has to reimburse his employer and not the other way around? Where are all the Greeks today as NATO and the Turkish military are doing whatever they please in the Aegean Sea? Where are all the Greeks to protest the impending expiration of the statute of limitations for those wealthy individuals accused in the so-called The Guard list of hoarding millions of euros overseas and evading taxes? Where are all the Greeks protesting recent legislative changes that are set to destroy the Greek dairy industry and the precious commodity known as Greek yogurt? Why didn't anyone protest Greece's rotten injustice system all these years? The rotten education system that favors rote learning and expensive, time-consuming private tutoring to supplement coursework? Where are all the supposedly clever, non-gullible Greeks? I'll tell you where they were and where they are. Sitting on a couch, watching TV, buying cheap imported products in chains owned by multinationals, and continuously sucking up to their local member of parliament, the same member of parliament that is destroying their lives but who might do them a personal favor or two in exchange for a household's worth of votes. And every once in a while, they will head down to protest, always in Syntagma Square in Athens, and always after their political party has invited them to do so, herding in the cattle and then herding them back out again. That's why we saw hundreds of thousands of people on the streets in favor of no prior to last summer's referendum, and when that overwhelming no was betrayed, you could practically count the protesters on your fingers. No one was there to herd them in anymore, so they stayed home. This is also why when many Greeks talk about the pre-Euro days now, they refer to those times as if it were the Stone Ages, as if there was no TV, no cars, and no imported cheese from Holland for their sandwiches. The fact that all of the major recent public works projects of Greece began when a country was still using the drachma, that the country had a national air carrier that served 5 continents and was one of the safest in the world, and that Greece was an international beacon of culture in the 1960s and 70s with 2 Nobel Prize winners, escapes them entirely. I am truly, truly ashamed of the current sorry state of the country and its people, and particularly those who are in my age bracket, the young people, who care more about trimming their hipster beards and which American flag or British flag t-shirt they will wear and what bar they will go to, instead of what is happening in society all around them. Ah, but they have the solution. Migration. They are, after all, taught that they are European now, not Greek. So they have no qualms about leaving without even putting up a fight for a better future in their own country. And I can guarantee you, most of them will never return. This is also why Greeklish and the English language rules the roost in terms of how these young people in Greece communicate nowadays. This is why younger and older generations alike have peed their pants in fear of what would happen if Greece is ousted from the Schengen Treaty. Heaven forbid they lose the opportunity to easily migrate to civilized countries like Germany, or to travel to Milan for espresso without a passport. And this is why people look at me like I have 2 heads when they find out that I learned the Greek language almost entirely on my own, instead of learning a more lucrative, as they put it, language. Thank goodness today's Greek youth did not exist during the World War II era. Otherwise, not only would they have waved the white flag without even putting up a fight, but they would also run off to civilized Germany to work and to live the European dream as part of the Third Reich, without the slightest concern about what is happening back in their homeland. So let's all park ourselves on our couches and on Facebook and enjoy and appreciate the manner in which Greece, each and every day, is being saved, again and again, enjoying the fruits of the so-called European dream and the European Union. A European Union whose leaders are unelected and who all seem to come from the same posse of Northern European countries. A European Union which is preparing to reject yet another overwhelming referendum result which doesn't suit its interests, the result seen in Holland just a few days ago. Let's continue sitting on our couches while the professional saviors in suits, with or without neckties, do the saving and the thinking for us. lest we hurt our heads if we do so ourselves. Enjoy that nice Easter lamb that's coming up and run off to live the European dream overseas, in the very same countries that are forcing you to migrate in the first place. It is truly, truly a shame that people I knew in college or who I grew up with in the United States had the opportunity to go back to their homelands or countries of ancestry, to countries like South Korea, Romania, Israel, and Turkey, and to make a living there and to give back to those countries, while it is so hard to do so in the case of Greece, and in a country which is not respected even by its own citizens. But clearly, they must know better. Not only are the people of Greece oh so clever and hard to fool, but they are European now as well, and they are being bailed out each and every day. As far as I'm concerned, though, they can take this Europe and this so-called European dream, which is in fact a nightmare that they have not woken up from yet, and they can stick it where the sun doesn't shine. That's all for now. I'll give you about a month to think about all of this. We just wrapped up our commentary of the week here on the Alagos Radio, where today's broadcast is just about ready to come to a close. We will be back in early May after the observation of Greek Orthodox Easter with more hard-hitting interviews and commentary that you will not want to miss. Be sure to check out our website, thealagosmedia.org, and our pages on Facebook and Twitter for updates. Until then, happy Easter to everyone who will be observing, and we'll be back again soon here on the Alagos Radio. Thank you.